Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the former chair of the New York Film Critics Circle and National Society of Film Critics, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic and guide to all things cinematic. He joins us weekly. The films are The Christophers, I Swear, and The AI Doc, or How I Became an Apocaloptimist.
Got three very different films I'd like to talk about today. So let's begin with The Christophers. This is the new movie from Steven Soderbergh, who, of course, burst onto the scene way, way back in the 80s with a movie called Sex, Lies, and Videotape, and has been very, very busy ever since. And one of the amusing things about Steven Soderbergh is that he retired from filmmaking many a long year ago. And just like some other people who have done that, I'm thinking of Ingmar Bergman, for example, he kept right on making movies. He just was making them for TV for a while. And now he's made this, which is a regular theatrical movie. So I'm perfectly pleased. He's a very talented filmmaker. He's made some movies I don't think are very good, but he's made quite a few movies that I think are very good. And I've spoken with him more than once, and he is definitely a very intelligent and with it guy. And I'm very glad that his filmmaking career continues apace. This was a movie written by Ed Solomon, and it's called The Christophers. And that's sort of a puzzling title until you see the movie, when it becomes clear very quickly. The main character is an old man, a grumpy old man, just like me, played by Ian McKellen. And he is an artist. And this is a movie which is all about art. And one of the reasons I rather like The Christophers is that it's nice to see a movie that's about something cultural and that takes something cultural pretty darn seriously. In this case, the emphasis is not so much on the painting as on the painter, whose name is Julian Sklar. You know, it's a movie that really is about art and the meaning of art and the value of art and stuff like that. And so it has a real sort of a plot to it. And what happens is, at the beginning of the movie, is that the children of this aging artist, and of course they're fully grown adults, they are very concerned about some paintings which their father Julian did, all using a particular model who was known as Christopher. So you have these paintings which as a group are called the Christophers, or the Christopher paintings. So he never finished them. He claims, in fact, that he never even got very far with them. But now his son and daughter feel that if they could get these paintings finished somehow, if only their father would finish them, they could be sold for millions and millions, because he's a very successful and popular and profitable artist. They could be sold for a lot of money, and that would make them rich. So they want to get these paintings finished, but Julian, the painter, won't even consider it. He doesn't want to do it. He has no intention of doing it. In fact, he wishes the paintings would just go away or even be destroyed. Well, he hires a brand new assistant, who is played by Michaela Cole, and her name is Laurie Butler, and she's a young Black woman. He's, of course, an old white artist. And one of the first things he tells her to do is to destroy these paintings. Well, the children, the son and the daughter, get to Laurie, and they are trying to enlist her to not destroy the paintings. But in fact, she, who has a gift for imitating other artists in her art, and who in fact has a particular gift for imitating Julian Sklar in her art, they say, why don't you finish these paintings? We'll sell them for a huge amount of money, and then we'll all split the profits. So that's what's going on here. It's basically a kind of a fraud deal, a kind of a scam deal, a kind of a con deal. And we're all wondering where that's going to go. In the meanwhile, a whole lot of the movie doesn't even deal with this directly, but deals with the relationship between Laurie and her grumpy old boss, Julian, who wants her to destroy the paintings, and then she doesn't do it. And then he decides he wants them, her not to shred them, but rather to burn them. And then for a while, they actually end up in a sort of a barbecue pit in the backyard. And then they don't get burned. And, well, I'm not going to tell how the movie comes out. So, of course, Ian McKellen is a wonderful actor. This is a little bit of a one-note part for him because he is a grumpy old man, and he is that from the very beginning to the very end of the movie. There's also a couple of scenes in the movie that don't exactly make sense to me. There's one point when he decides that he will finish the paintings, but he'll do a really bad job of it for his own reasons. And it becomes just kind of a silly, clownish kind of a thing. And I don't think it's a scene that worked at all in the film. On the other hand, it's always fun to watch a grand old actor like Ian McKellen do fine work, and it's really a treat to watch a fine young actor like Michaela Cole do very fine work. The ones who play the children, just Jessica Gunning and James Corden, are also very good, and there's a few modest parts which are generally well cast. So if you're interested in art, then this is definitely the movie for you at the moment. It's not a great film, but it's a good film. Steven Soderbergh rarely makes a film that's actually not good. And this movie, I think, works very nicely. It's a respectable part of his filmography. It's maybe not as great a work of art as maybe Julian Scarr's greatest paintings were, but it's a pretty darn good movie. I should also mention that one of Julian Scarr's things that he does to kind of keep himself in the public eye and make money is he appears regularly on a YouTube thing called Art Fight, where he argues with and gives bad advice to people who phone in and stuff like that. And this movie is certainly huge, gigantic strides over that sort of thing. So The Christophers, pretty good movie. Now I Swear, and that's not me taking an oath, that's the title of the movie, which was written and directed by Kirk Jones, a very successful filmmaker who's made a whole lot of movies in the past. And this is, again, a kind of a docudrama, as I said at the beginning, or rather a biopic, because it's based on the real life of a guy named John Davidson, an English fellow who is afflicted with Tourette's syndrome, which is the psychological or neurological disorder where you uncontrollably shout things out, and very often what you shout out are foul or dirty or profane or obscene words or phrases. And so if you don't want to hear foul language in a movie, then I Swear is not a movie for you. Now, of course, John Davidson is a real-life person, truly dealing with this condition through most of his life. According to the movie, it sort of comes on him all of a sudden one day at school when he's 14 years old. And from then on, his future is, at least in that department, pretty much determined. And so we see him dealing with this, coping with this, and all the bad things that happen. When he's a kid, he gets in terrible trouble at school. He's constantly having his hands slapped with a ruler by the principal because he does these things which are considered to be naughty when in fact they are uncontrollable. At one point, he has to get involved with the legal system, and it turns out that at least at that time, Tourette's syndrome was not a legally recognizable diagnosis, and so that's no excuse for the kinds of things that he does. We see things happen to him like he gets terribly beaten up in a park at night because he shouted out the wrong thing in the presence of the wrong person, who then comes for him later on with some friends and with a crowbar. That's pretty harrowing to watch. So we have things like that happen. Now, the movie's certainly not all downbeat. In fact, the opposite of that. The very first thing in the movie, the way the movie begins, and it's a real-life thing, is that John Davidson gets honored by the Queen, because we discover this over the course of the film. Eventually, he overcomes his affliction enough to be able to create a kind of a center for people with Tourette's syndrome, a kind of a support group situation where people can come in and tell their stories and all recognize that they're not the only one, and, you know, kind of just help each other deal with this in their day-to-day lives and maybe help each other figure out ways of coping with this that maybe get beyond their day-to-day lives and actually help them in deep ways. Anyway, he did that. He set up this community center, and it grows and it grows and it becomes a big thing. And at the beginning of this movie, and again, at the very end, we actually see John Davidson being honored by the Queen. And of course, being a person with Tourette syndrome, he hollers out a terrible obscenity at the Queen. However, she doesn't mind a bit. And that kind of shows us that we shouldn't mind a bit. And it shows everybody in the movie that maybe they shouldn't mind a bit. Of course, a lot of them do. But over the course of the film, we see how John Davidson becomes more and more able to deal with the situations that he has to get himself into and get himself out of. Late in the movie, he discovers a treatment that has just been developed at a university. And he's invited there to try it out. And it's a thing that he wears on his wrist. And it apparently provides some sort of electrical stimulation. And he is able to walk through the library of the university without making a single bit of noise. And he says he hasn't felt this good since he was 14. However, at the end of the movie, he still seems to be afflicted. So that part I found vague, and it didn't really make sense. And the movie does not always explain the things that happen in it as well as I think it should. Another problem with the movie is that, especially as it gets near the end, it becomes really sentimental and really triumphalist. And aren't we all wonderful because we have these afflictions? And aren't we all wonderful because we overcome them to a greater or lesser degree? And that's all very nice, but it's just presented in the movie as a way of tugging at your heartstrings. I always resent having my heartstrings tugged at, even when it's in a good cause, as this certainly is. So I wish the movie had been, let's say, a bit more objective about things, a bit less sentimental, a bit less of a tearjerker as it gets near its end. That said, I hope it does a whole lot for the Tourette syndrome community. I hope it does a whole lot for people who are neurodiverse in all kinds of ways. And I hope that it has a really positive effect on society to a greater or lesser extent. It's a very positive movie. It's a very constructive movie. It's a really well-meaning movie. It doesn't always succeed, in my opinion, because I just think it's too calculated for its own good. But it's a movie that wants to do good, and I hope it does succeed in doing some good. I had a reasonably good time watching it. And finally, our real documentary for the day, The AI Doc, or How I Became an Apocaloptimist. That last word, of course, is a combination of apocalypse and optimist. And it is all about the filmmaker himself, whose name is Daniel Rohrer. He directed the movie with Charlie Tyrell. And he sets about to make this movie about AI, about artificial intelligence, about what it's going to do with the world that we live in. And Daniel Rohrer, like me, has been hearing all these different things. Of course, he's been delving into it a lot more deeply than I have. But the predictions that from people in the know, people involved with artificial intelligence, seem to range from, oh yeah, it's going to be important, it's going to really change life, but it's not that huge a deal, to it could be the end of the world or the beginning of an entire new way of living, as important as the invention of electricity, as important as the discovery of fire. So you have these predictions from people in the know at these totally opposite polar extremes of goodness or badness as to what's going to result. So Daniel Rohrer decides he's going to make a documentary film and he's going to look into this. So he brings a whole lot of people who are involved with all different kinds of artificial intelligence, institutions and organizations and discoveries and whatnot, research and so forth, brings them all before his camera and asks them questions. So for a while, we have these predictions that, oh my gosh, this is absolutely, really could be the end of the world. These things get so powerful that then they can duplicate themselves. They can duplicate themselves a million times, and then they're a million times more powerful than they were before. And all they have to do is not be in alignment, that's the big technical term, not be in alignment with human needs and desires, and they will simply destroy us. They'll treat us like the ants that are in our path when we walk down the sidewalk. And that goes on for a while, and it looks like Daniel Rohrer is going to become a total pessimist. And watching the movie, I found myself becoming a total pessimist. However, then he gets the other side of the story, which is how wonderful this is going to be for diagnosing diseases, for treating diseases, for alleviating all of the woes of humanity wherever we are and whatever is happening. And it's going to be coming into reality quite soon. So that's the really good, optimistic side of the story. And then the movie seems to come to an end with, again, real sentimentality. During the course of the movie, Daniel Rohrer's wife gets pregnant. And then he starts wondering, should I bring a baby into this world? What if the worst predictions of AI come true? And so that becomes a kind of a subplot in the movie. And he decides to end the movie with babies and about the possibilities for the future and how where there's life, there's hope. And where there are human beings, there always is a hope for a better tomorrow. And I just thought, oh my gosh, this is another tearjerker movie. It's just trying to tug at my heartstrings and make me feel good by showing me babies. However, then, interestingly, his wife, who just gave birth to his own baby, comes on and says, you can't end the movie that way. That's way over the top. It's too hopeful. It's too optimistic. What about all those bad predictions that you heard? You got to bring that stuff in at the ending, too. You can't just show us babies. And I agreed with the wife. So, okay, then we get a second ending of the movie, which is a little bit more realistic and which really gives more of a balanced picture of the whole thing. Although I must say, it works its way around again to a very sentimental final conclusion. But I really did enjoy that twist that comes not long before the end. So, The AI Doc, or How I Became an Apocaloptimist. It's a nice movie. It's a good movie. I learned a few things from it. There were a whole lot of things in it that I've heard before because I'm kind of interested in this topic. And, for people who are not familiar with it, it's a good introduction, I think. And it gives you certainly the upside, what could happen, and the bad side, what could happen. And then we get to make up our own minds in the end, as Daniel Rohrer really basically encourages us to do, about whether we're going to welcome this, live in dread of it, or maybe just figure, well, it's happening, it's coming, we'll just have to see how things develop. I do think the movie was way too optimistic about if we as people simply take control, the world is not that simple. Even America is not that simple. And a lot of the good things that are predicted will only happen to privileged people, I myself predict. Flaws like that notwithstanding, The AI Doc is an interesting movie. I recommend that people watch it. It'll really get you thinking about these things, if nothing else. So that is my partly apocalyptic story this week.
For which we thank you as ever and always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films The Christophers, I Swear, and The AI Doc, or How I Became an Apocaloptimist.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.